it is very clear that the head of the snake is the financial system. The whole point of finance is to indebt, otherwise to enslave. What is a mortgage? I mean, what does that stand for? It's a death grip. So when you get a mortgage, you have a death grip held over you because you are in debt. You don't even own the house. The bank owns the house that loans you the money to buy the house, unless you're fortunate enough to have all the money to buy it outright. And even then, you can be taxed by the government, and if you fail to keep up with those taxes, the government can then take it from you. The whole system is based on a financial fraud, which effectively takes the power that we have and it gives it to a tiny group of individuals who are running the world through the control of finance. With the infinite supply of money that we have allowed them to take, they have literally an infinite supply of money, and with that money, and from their psychopathic point of view, they have bought everything and everyone who can be bought. So those of us who cannot be bought, because we operate on a level that goes way beyond the material, we are not rewarded for such behavior, we are punished for such behavior. And the most slovenly, disgustingly criminal, pedophilia, corrupt moral individuals, those are the ones that are rewarded in this system, which is upside down. We reward the pedophiles, we reward the corrupt, we reward the liars, we reward the people with no morals at all.
There's two things we love in this country. It's cash and freedom. But anybody that's ever been poor here can tell you that in America, if you ain't got no cash, you ain't got no freedom. You're shackled. Shackled to a job that exploits you. Shackled to a shit interest rate that saps you dry. Shackled to medical bills for ailments so old they could have their own student loans they're defaulting on. It's an oppressive and disheartening state of affairs that leaves people doing whatever they can just to scrape by because they don't have any other choice, and that's not freedom. But a universal basic income can give you freedom, lots of freedom. Freedom to go back to school, to learn new skills, freedom to take care of an aging parent, the freedom to start a small business, the freedom to leave an abusive relationship, the freedom to just not have to worry about money every single second of every day.
Well, I mean, up until literally the last 2 years of my life, I've been like one emergency situation away from complete financial catastrophe, basically. Like just living paycheck to paycheck, not having any extra money for anything at all. And, you know, things happen. My name is Trey Crowder. I got attention on the internet for these videos I made featuring a character called the Liberal Red.
Trey Crowder, Liberal Red.
What's up, Trey Crowder? Long time no skew.
I want to talk to y'all about something that's deeply personal to me. Pills.
A lot of people have asked me what I think about Black Lives Matter. Well, put simply, I think that they do.
For a long time, when I was a young adult, I didn't have health insurance, you know? And so I wouldn't do like intramural sports and stuff like that at college, sincerely, because I was like, well, you know, what if I blow my knee out or something? I'm screwed. And those types of things, just knowing that you're on the precipice of like ruin all the time, yeah, it's extremely stressful. And I know for a fact, just statistically, that a lot of people in this country are living that day to day, you know, all the time.
Only 41% of U.S. adults have enough savings to cover a $1,000 emergency.
We have record numbers of Americans who are on the verge of having their cars repossessed.
More than 137 million Americans are facing financial hardship because of medical debt.
My son couldn't afford the life-saving medication he needed.
The worsening unemployment picture is simply staggering.
The pandemic is also causing many to go hungry.
My bills are going to back up, and I'm going to be in trouble here in a couple weeks.
Student loan debt in the United States has doubled.
40% of Americans 65 and older are in default.
It's always going to be there.
For me personally, I heard about the idea of a universal basic income and was pretty immediately of the opinion, well, there you go. That's at least a solution, because we're going to have to do something.
The idea is this. Every citizen in this country would receive $1,000 a month every month, no strings attached. That might seem far-fetched to you, but it could be a potential improvement over some of our existing welfare programs that I grew up on. And don't get me wrong, I'm grateful for them, but I kind of look back on those programs and food stamps and all that the same way that I look back on the final season of Game of Thrones. I'm still glad that it exists, but it could have and should have been so much better. We deserved better.
UBI is actually not a new idea. In America, you could trace it back to one of our founding fathers, Thomas Paine. You know, the guy who first convinced people that American independence might be a good idea. But he's not the only one. Martin Luther King Jr. was for UBI.
Now, one of the answers, it seems to me, is a guaranteed annual income, a guaranteed minimum income for all people and for all families of our country.
In 1969, Richard Nixon even proposed an actual plan to Congress.
Let us place a floor under the income of every family with children in America. And without those demeaning, soul-stifling affronts to human dignity that so blight the lives of welfare children today.
One state in America actually already has a form of basic income, Alaska. Each year, they take a portion of the state's oil revenue and distribute it to every man, woman, and child.
It should be an example for the world to emulate, and the Alaskans ought to be extremely proud of it because it's a whole new concept of people owning the resources and government having to take the money back from the people instead of government getting the money and parceling it out in socialistic programs. It's exactly the opposite of what some people term the dividend to be socialistic. It's capitalistic in extreme.
Okay, so they've got oil up in Alaska, but how do we pay for basic income in the rest of the country? Taxes. Yeah, I said it, the dreaded T word. But yes, actually, it's time to end corporate welfare, get big tech to pay its fair share, and use tax mechanisms to create the strongest safety net the world has ever seen. And all these rich people can rest easy knowing the extra money they give back isn't going to some big soulless government bureaucracy, it's going directly to the people. Social justice, get with it.
Well, I tell people I'm from a small town a lot of times, especially in the South, it can end up in this, like, sort of a small town contest thing where it's like, no, my hometown's smaller than yours. And I feel like that's an argument that I typically win because it's really, really small. I remember Salina as this, like, quaint little southern town with, you know, some charm to it, and the football team was good, and the town square was, you know, just little mom and pop businesses and storefronts and that type of thing, and everything was fine. But at the beating heart of the town's economy was this big clothing factory where most people worked.
And that's where my mom worked, that's where a lot of our community people worked.
I made every collar to come out of there for a long, long time. And then I made cuffs.
My dad, he was the head engineer. And my mom, she actually sewed.
Everybody in Salina that you talk to used to work at Oshkosh. Oshkosh that, Oshkosh that. And if you heard of Oshkosh Bagosh or whatever, yeah.
For decades, the center of the town's economy was a large clothing factory. And in the mid-90s, after NAFTA, it made like a stoner at midnight and went south of the border. And we never recovered.
There's been no real industry that's come in there in the 20-plus years since. And as far as I'm aware, there's not anything major in that regard on the horizon. So Salina, in my opinion, is like a textbook example of the type of place that would benefit a lot from a basic income, and that also ostensibly you'd think the people there would be all for it, but I don't know that that is true.
So there it is, scene of the crime. It used to be an Oshkosh Bagosh factory.
Yes, by gosh, it did.
How long, do you know how long it was here?
The factory was here, and when it closed, people had worked there 40 years.
Go ahead, after you.
I was in business up the street, and there was a little wind blowing through town that maybe a factory was going to be closing. I mean, people stopped coming into the restaurant and spending $4 on, you know, a sub or something like that. If it was $3, $4, or $5, people stopped spending it.
You know,
you've got the cafe, me, Mom, and Pa, and Daddy are running the video store and the car lot and that. By the time I graduate high school, it's literally all gone.
It was sad.
And not only is that all gone, but, like, you know, all the stuff with Mama, her getting all strung out and going to jail.
Yeah.
Like, my life changed tremendously for the worse, just like everybody else's around here when that happened. You know what I mean? Like, it affected, like, literally everything, pretty much. The ripple effects of it.
Your dad got sick.
Yeah, I know.
You know, that was, I mean, we saw a bunch of stuff.
The hits just kept on coming. I'm saying I think there will be a lot of people that will say, well, I don't want a handout.
Yeah,
I'm not looking for a handout.
I just want to work.
Bring the jobs back. That's what you need to do, politicians. But, like, I mean, can't you easily envision a lot of people responding to it that way?
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Right. Well, I think that's going to be a major problem.
I would love to also see how they respond if you put a check in everyone's hand and slide it today and see what they did with it.
Right. Presumably, they buy stuff or, you know, finally get, like, the fan belt fixed on their car or whatever that they've been putting off for forever. But I'm saying they're going to go to some mechanic around here to do that. You know what I mean? Like, theoretically, a big portion of it would get, like, pumped straight back into just the general economy. Because they're going to spend it on things that they need that they haven't been buying in a long time because they ain't had no money to do it.
The idea of giving unconditional cash may not sit well with everybody. I know that's a shocker.
How does this sound? A paycheck every month, even if you do not have a job.
This, I think, is a continuation towards the road of socialism in America.
Welfare should be a second chance, not a way of life.
We're going to take from you over here to give to you over here because that's what we're going to do, the universal basic income.
When you're taxing people and redistributing wealth without merit, that encourages laziness.
What forced Warren Buffett to work hard? What forced this guy to work hard? Not handing them a check.
You cannot appreciate something fundamentally that you get for free.
Magnolia Mothers Trust is providing a guaranteed income to low-income African-American women and their families. The Magnolia Mothers Trust is doing this in the form of $1,000 a month for 12 months. I am so excited. It's like my second child in a matter of months. I had two kids in 2018, and Magnolia Mothers Trust is one of them. It is taking a population that works so hard to be seen on a daily basis and saying, we see you, we honor your stories, we believe in you, and we trust that you know what it is that you need for your families.
No, you do not.
There will be a tremendous break for gas, to support my kids, help me pay bills, and have enough to stretch from month to month.
And what did we get the last time?
Well, my mom was in an abusive relationship. My dad was very, very abusive to my mom. So when I got into my relationship was abusive. And I was like, I would never, ever put my kids in jeopardy of any relationship that I'm in. It's not worth it. So you have to break the cycle somewhere. So that's what I did. I moved to Jackson and I broke the cycle.
That's $1,000 a month, no strings attached. I can use it however I would like. That means, I don't know, I just won't go crazy. Like one night when me and my babies were in here, we actually fell asleep on the couch. And seemed like someone was right here, like outside the door. Gunshots. Like the first thing that came to my mind was grab my baby. I feared for my life, and I knew, like, at the moment, I'm not staying here forever. I will get back in school, pay off some debts, and continue to raise my credit score so that I can get the home that I want for me and my little ones.
All of the individuals that we work with live in communities where they receive housing vouchers. We really are trying to figure out the impact and benefits when cash is infused into these situations where individuals are highly subsidized. But then also we're trying to get a better understanding of how the women themselves are able to show up. Are they less stressed? Are they more engaged in their local community? Are they more engaged in their kids' school? Are they more engaged in their own self-care? Are they able to now look towards careers and not just a job because they have that freedom?
Good morning, sleepyhead.
Where are you?
In shirt?
Yeah, we're pretty much getting up at 5, getting the middle one dressed and ready, take him to the bus stop at least by 5:45, getting him off the school. We're actually coming back to the house. Oldest one, she's getting ready. Her bus will arrive no later than 6:55. Actually having to rush back home, get the baby ready to take him to my mom's house. He's entering the terrible two stage.
Would you get that coat and come along? Sir, come, let me see. Can I see?
Get ready myself and also be in class at like 7:20. So I'm like rushing.
Look what I can't hear you.
What up? You want to put your coat on? So I think the lack of sleep is very challenging. I want to at least get to a point in my life where I'm actually working a good paying job. I don't want a job that's just gonna make ends meet. I wanna be able to save and, you know, take trips and do all other things too, so.
And the reason that I am a fan of guaranteed income, because it is this idea that everybody is deserved just by virtue of your being here. You deserve a life where you and your family can thrive. You deserve a life where you can actually dream. You deserve a life where you can actualize those dreams.
It's going to help us really, really, like, really, really a lot. I'm very excited about this, not really having too many like rules or just tell you what you have to spend it on or how much you have to spend it.
Let me see. Can I see?
When I was on Tenneth, this money's for gas. You have to put this is for gas and transportation.
Look, do you see that dog? I see him.
You're not gonna tear it. You can't take food stamps and pay your light bill. Like, you can't take food stamps and get your medicine. So it's a big difference being able to just go and do everything I need to do. It's just gonna be exciting.
I think most of America believes that our systems work, that we have welfare and we have these safety nets and they actually are doing what it is that they're supposed to be doing. And that's not true. That's actually a myth. Most folks don't quite understand how complicated these various systems are, and in the complication of these systems, that they're not working, they're just ineffective. For example, if you're on TANF, your caseworker could say, okay, you have 2 weeks to get a job, but no support is provided in getting that job. No child care is provided while you're looking for that job. If you do not have a job within 2 weeks, you are sanctioned. In most cases, that means that you will lose your SNAP for 90 days. What that means is that for 90 days, you have no way of ensuring that your household, your kids, have food. Take a moment, let that sink in. That's also why a lot of individuals choose not to fool with TANF, because who can run the risk of not being able to feed their kids?
93.
Good job.
Okay. And instead of recognizing that it's the policies that are wrong, we're blaming the families. We're saying, oh, families don't want to go work. Or, oh, families don't want to, you know, have to take the drug test that we're requiring them to take because they're on drugs. No, it's none of that. If you went out and had conversations, you could actually really get to what the problems are with these policies that are being implemented. I think our current safety net system is not working. And so I believe that a guaranteed income is an opportunity for us to rewrite that system.
Everybody deserves to be able to take care of their child. Everybody deserves to be able to have safe and adequate housing. Everyone deserves to be able to depend on a meal. A society that cannot take care of its children, a society that cannot take care of its elders, a society that leaves people in the cold without options, cannot call itself civilized. We're trying to elevate and push towards a dignity economy, an economy which focuses on the inherent dignity of every person and show that that actually operates in the best interest of all citizens. We have to equip mothers to be able to care for their children. And the more we're able to do that, the more whole societies we're raising, the more whole circumstances and conditions we're lifting up so that we can make certain that we create these dignity economies we should see.
In America, we do have a welfare system in place to help people who are struggling financially, but it's a conditional system. You have to prove to the government that you truly need help. And if that doesn't immediately sound unfair to you, consider that different people's different financial woes can be very wide-ranging, hard to quantify, typically time-sensitive, and overall, just generally speaking, pretty damn complicated to sort out. But luckily for them, every American knows that our government excels at resolving complex and nuanced issues in an efficient and judicious manner, right? Yeah, that's a joke. No, it's the opposite, and our system is well and truly broken. But let's imagine for a second that you are deemed worthy of receiving government support. The minute you get a job and your income increases, that support will decrease. Think about the incentives of that. That can make it so that it doesn't make financial sense to take a job. If it's a low-paying job, if you are a single parent, you need childcare for when you're working, you could be successful in your job search and end up worse off than you were before when you were on government assistance alone. That's called a poverty trap. But universal basic income, on the other hand, is an unconditional system. You don't have to prove that you deserve anything. You don't have to constantly jump through bureaucratic hoops. You don't have to choose between working a job and actually being able to afford your bills, because under UBI, everyone will always be better off with a job. UBI can be an economic floor on which we all can stand.
I want to let you know we're having a town hall discussion and cookout tomorrow. I'm just handing out flyers for an event we're having tomorrow at the courthouse.
My name is Alma Zalecki, and I'm an associate professor of practice in political science at NYU Shanghai.
Awesome!
It's going to be right across the street at the courthouse.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about ways of bringing economic vitality to towns like Salina.
I think it would be great if people really understood what a basic income is. I think it would be great if this was something that they started to talk to candidates about as well, so that we can bring a broader attention to the idea of basic income and get the voices of ordinary people rather than just academics like me.
The simplest way that I can explain a basic income is that it's like Social Security for the rest of us. A basic income would be a monthly payment that would go to everyone. I think if we get these details right, basic income can eliminate poverty, can increase economic security for working folks, and can give a boost to local economies like the economy of Salina. Does it sound good to you?
Yeah.
Does it sound too good to be true?
Yeah. Wash your clothes out, sweetie. Wash them good.
Faith, hope, and love. That's what I go by. That's exactly what I go by. Okay, here's one, Mom.
You pawn your wedding ring to put money on your electric, and then, you know, you're wondering how you're going to get that back, and I have no clue how I'm going to get that back, but would rather my bills be paid than a ring be on my finger. That's just how I see it. I don't want to be rich by any means. I don't want nothing handed to me. I just want to be able to pay my bills for my kids. That's all I want to be able to do. Last Tuesday, my husband went to child support court over his oldest daughter. Not our three, but his oldest one. He showed that judge, look, I just got a job, and I'll start paying however much you want me to pay a month on it. That wasn't good enough. That he was being sentenced to 180 days or until his family could come up with $700. $700 is a lot of money to me. $10 is a lot of money to me. So with him gone, what do you do for your kids for Christmas? What do you do? I have no means of income. None. And I just feel like the harder I try for my kids to be normal, the further they go back.
One of the feminist arguments for basic income is that for a very long time, care work has been devalued. We've devalued care work as a society. And if we think about what really matters to a good society, to a society where people are able to flourish, then of course we realize that care should be put much more at the center of our conception of a good society. Basic income, by being unconditional, enables people to make the choice to spend more time caring for others.
Why will we tax the wealthy for a basic income? Is it because we hate the wealthy or we resent them for their success? No, it's because they're the ones who are benefiting from the economy as it is right now. They're the ones who are doing well. All right, we're not going to take all their money. We're going to let them keep enough so that they are incentivized to keep doing the work that they do. We want to reward entrepreneurs. We want to reward people who take business risks. We want to reward people who create jobs for other Americans. But we take some of the gains that they're making, and we share it with everybody. And that not only has the effect of reducing economic insecurity and eliminating poverty, it also has the effect of putting resources in the hands of the people who know best what to do for their own communities.
Most people I know, they leave their 8-hour job and go home and relax, but I have about 3 or 4 more hours to go, so I just keep change my clothes at first job and go to the second, and it just keeps me from wanting to go home.
What's the book about this time?
Well, it just finished. I took it to the mailbox. It was Amish.
Ah, yeah. I may have listened to some of that one with you.
Even if you didn't have to maybe work as hard to get by, you could maybe spend more time with your loved ones while you still have them.
Margaret, this was my grandpa's sister. She came off a horse in a curve, and they found her on the bank. And over here is my great-grandmother and great-grandfather. Here. It's peaceful. I really like it up here. And since my family's buried here, I just feel like I need to come up here and take care of the cemetery. I just like to volunteer and do things for my community and try to make a difference.
No one ever dies and says, "And I wish I had a better job." They say, "I wish I had more time to spend with my family. I wish I could have explored some of my interests of music or art or church or being a baseball coach." And so I just think we're at a moment where we are going to have machines and artificial intelligence produce a lot of things much more cheaply than we've ever seen before. We're going to have the potential for abundance. And when we have abundance, what we should do is give people the chance to live out their dreams, whatever they are. And that's the gift of this moment if we don't turn it into the Hunger Games.
We already spend billions of dollars every year in this country to try to address poverty and economic insecurity. What do we get for that money? We get 50% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. 50% of Americans who have little or no savings in the bank to tide them over if they encounter a serious illness. 50% of Americans don't have that kind of savings to get them over that kind of an event.
Come on in the house here. It is what it is, but I'm happy here. Watch the rocks there, you might trip over.
I seriously thought I was the healthiest person ever. I all of a sudden it just felt like someone hit me in my spine with an axe. And my blood pressure was 380 over 260. And then they finally came in and decided that I'd had an aortic dissection. There's three linings to your aorta, which feeds all your body with blood. And mine was ripping apart by the force of the blood, which means I have to keep my blood pressure down very, very low, because if it gets too high, it'll rupture and you're just dead wherever you're at.
When you're sick and you're trying to deal with a potentially fatal health issue, there's just so much stress, you know, on the financial end of it, because you're getting these phone calls every day, and every attorney I would call, it was like $1,000, $1,200 just to file bankruptcy. And I'm thinking, you know, am I so broke I can't afford to file for bankruptcy, you know? My cardiovascular specialist there at Vanderbilt, he wrote on my medical records, he said, look, this guy does not need to wait for his disability. He needs it now. And I still had to wait 15 months. You know, if it hadn't been for family and some friends, I don't know what I would have done. I really don't, because, I mean, I had no money. And, you know, I had to eat. You can look at someone like you can look at me right now, perhaps, and maybe think I look perfectly healthy, but you don't know what's going on inside someone's body.
You know what we spend another $1 trillion on? We spend another $1 trillion on tax cuts for wealthy people. Do you see the effects of wealthy people spending those tax cuts that we give them in Salina? Or do you think that instead of economic activity always coming from the top and trickling down, that economic activity might actually be the kind of thing that bubbles up from the ground, right? With, if everybody has a decent amount of economic security and has money to spend, then economic activity will spiral upwards in a community like Salina.
Left in the Army originally, and when I got out, I just didn't come back home. I just started working. Stayed gone for 27 years. The reason that I'm here back in Salina is because I have custody of my two granddaughters. They are 11 and 10. It's a full-time thing. I leave here and go home and start getting ready for them to get home from school, and then of course we have to have supper and get their homework, get their baths, and it's bedtime and ready to start all over again. They've been through a lot to be as small as they are, and seen things and heard things and that a child shouldn't, you know. Drugs is a really bad thing here in this little small town, and it has destroyed many families. It sure has shook mine to the ground.
Run! Oh, my God!
Girl. They're smart enough, they could do whatever if they want to. I just don't want them to have to work as hard as I do.
You just don't want one of us to live in a basement.
We are the champions!
Oh my God. In fact, I gave up the best job I ever had in my life when I came back to take care of the girls. And it was either that or let them go into state's custody. And so I gave it all up and came back home. I mean, you just do what you have to do, you know? So. There you go. I do think about where I spend my money, and I would much rather do it here than to have to drive 30 or 45 minutes for the nearest place. See? Well, because this is the fashion nowadays, we really would like to see the town come alive again. Like I said, we just need more people that are willing to invest in the community.
But if we give everybody money, everybody has something to spend, and they can spend it in each other's businesses, and that creates an upward spiral of economic activity that can revitalize a small town like Salina. And if I can make an analogy to a board game, if you think about the game Monopoly, every time you go around the board and you pass go, you get another $200. If you didn't have that $200 every time you pass go in Monopoly, the game would be over in about 3 turns.
See that $200 you get for passing go in Monopoly? That's universal basic income. It's there, no matter what. It's unconditional. You know it's coming. You're getting it whether you're winning or you're losing. And if you're losing, it can give you a chance. It can give you hope that maybe, just maybe, you can still pull this off.
Our representatives in legislatures and in Congress, they know that investments pay off, right? They know that, for example, $1 million investment in the fish hatchery at Dale Hollow pays off in multiples of that amount every year in the tourism that it brings into this community.
A lot of people actually travel here just to fish. And by them coming to Salina just to fish, they have to buy groceries here, have to buy a fishing license, have to buy gas. You know, they stimulate the economy, you know, quite a bit.
Right? This is why our representatives fight for money in Washington to bring back to our communities, because they know that these investments can have multiplier effects that bring in much more than the cost of those programs.
It goes straight out to the river.
Because the dock is a little bit either further down.
Look here, look. Oh. The hospital just got a trout.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, did you get it?
God.
Infrastructure like roads and bridges and rail brings in business. Well, basic income is like infrastructure spending for families, right? It allows families to pay for the infrastructure that they need, whether it's childcare, or whether it's housing, or whether it's food, clothing, or a car that works, or medical expenses. These are all infrastructure investments as well in the productive power of our people, in our families, in our communities.
Finally, my wife came up with some money and got me out. It was hard on her. I can't imagine what she had to go through to do it. I hated to put her in that predicament, and I would never have to put her in that predicament again if I can help it. But there, like I said, Salina, it's hard to get work, and it's hard to pay. You know, if you ain't got the money, you can't pay it. It scares me to death that I any day, or if I know if I don't pay it, after so long, they're going to come and get me and take me away from my family again.
Are you working right now in Salina?
Off and on. Working roofing. It's hard on me. Of course, you guys noticed my hands and stuff. It's hard on me because I retain fluid and stuff. But I get it done when I have to because of my kids, you know.
We tried to go to a doctor's office. They wouldn't accept him because he don't have insurance. And then that goes all the way back to the money thing. No money. So because you don't got no money, we don't care about your health. We don't care what's going on with you. We're not going to tell you goodbye. They've all turned him down.
Ready?
And he didn't show it to you guys, but when he slid down the hill over there to catch Landon, that hurt him. It got him.
How would $1,000 a month help you?
It would God almighty. I couldn't imagine what it would do for my family. Me and my wife would live better. We wouldn't argue as much. This is my oldest daughter, Fallon. I love you. Go play with Mama and talk to these people, okay? I'm gonna be down. Be careful.
Two choices when we design programs for the poor and for people who are struggling. We can say, you need to prove to me first that you're worthy of my help, and then I'll help you. Or we can treat people the way we treat our families, our children, our neighbors, and say, we're going to help you first because we have faith in you. We believe that you're going to do something good with that help. And that's what a basic income does.
A couple of different things. The presupposition is that there is a belief of inherent good, that within people there's a common belief and understanding that most people are basically good. I believe in that. We say that you ought to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. That's a really classic Southern saying, you know. Some people don't have bootstraps to pull up. Some people don't have hands to pull them. Some people don't have feet to put them on. To be a person of faith, no matter what one's specific theological bent is or what tribe of Christianity or other belief system that we ascribe to, that there is and there ought to be a common thread of loving our neighbor for who they are, for where they are, not for who and where we think they ought to be. That kind of love was good enough for Jesus. And I think it ought to be good enough for us too.
Amen.
What's interesting to me in talking to people about basic income, and especially people that would benefit from it, is they're often resistant to the idea. And often the resistance takes the form of, you know, some other people will be lazy. Some other people will use it for drugs. Some other people will misuse it in some way. Some other people will choose not to work.
Don't you think some of these people, if you give them money, they wouldn't turn into dope-head couch potatoes? Mm-hmm. Worse than what we are now.
Mm-hmm. But when I ask people, well, what would you do, right? No one has ever said to me, like, oh, I'll sit on the couch and buy some drugs and some alcohol and be lazy.
If I look at it this way, if I'm growing a garden and my family go out there, have a nice garden, we'd work hard on that. So you're saying I should just open the door and let the neighbor down the road that didn't want to work so hard come in there and get part of my garden. How's that right for us?
This kind of resistance is almost a question of human nature. You know, how do people think about other people beyond their own family and friends? Do they trust them or do they not trust them? And I think that's what we kind of have to talk about. And that's where actually pilots are very useful, because we have a little bit of, we have actually quite a lot of empirical evidence saying, well, actually most people act like you and your friends and your family.
Basic income pilots have been done all over the world. And generally, they do not find that people misuse the cash or stop working when they receive it. In 2019, the mayor of Stockton, California launched an 18-month program where they gave $500 a month, no strings attached, to 125 residents who made less than the city's annual median income. What have those recipients spent spent the money on? Surprise. Groceries, paying bills, you know, the same things you and your family would probably spend the money on too.
So we are within the last 30 days of the pilot project. In this first year with the 20 women that we've worked with, we have seen them do everything from pay off predatory debt, go back to school, get better employment opportunities, feel like they are more engaged parents, reestablish relationships, really just have an opportunity to show up and live their full lives. And that's the beauty and the power of cash.
Oh, I used it for so many things. Staying on top of paying the bills, getting the household things. I was having to, like, take the baby to class. So, you know, you can't really just really have the baby at school. So, daycare.
Allowing him to be somewhere where he can also not just being watched, but also learn.
I mean, I was able to go ahead and enrolled him in daycare and then just focus on school. I started my second semester in medical billing and coding. After I finished that semester, I made the dean's list. That was very exciting. I got my GED. I graduated in June. I was very excited about that because that was really one of the things that kind of hindered me from getting a job, basically, well, a good job.
Receiving $1,000 a month, even though it is a blessing, it's not enough to sustain yourself or your family. So individuals took this for what it was, an opportunity to get a leg up, an opportunity to put in place a plan for themselves and their families. So no one quit working. Individuals went and got better career opportunities. Individuals went back to school. Individuals paid off debt. Individuals were able to show up in their own lives. So.
You better slow down. He proposed Valentine's Day. it was very exciting. He connected with the kids, and 6 months from the day he proposed, we went ahead and got married and had a wedding. I was nervous. And I get up there, and I'm just like, oh, my God, I have to do something. The tears are going to roll. They're going to roll. And I look up, and he boo-hooing. He boo-hooing. He crying harder than everyone.
Well, you know,
so it was exciting.
Mom, you know he's crying because he saw me cry.
Yeah, she started it. She started the ripple of crying. His mom actually was diagnosed with cancer first, and so that also brought our relationship closer too because, you know, my mom got sick and, you know, she needed a lot when she got sick. There's medicine, equipment, you name it. She helped with the bills, she helped with the kids. So now her being down, you know, just to return a favor, just to be like, Mom, I'm here for you, just like he was here for me.
Even though it is a guaranteed income pilot and there are other guaranteed income pilots currently being conducted, ours is the only one working with extremely low-income families, so families who have various subsidies that they are dependent upon. And even though individuals had a decrease in benefits, they still say that they are glad that they received the cash because the cash allowed them the opportunity to do whatever they needed. It wasn't a voucher or a subsidy dedicated to one particular thing.
Well, most importantly, we do like a family night a lot. Skating, bowling, movies. We were able to celebrate a lot of things that we had, you know, times before. Holidays had just kind of passed us by, but actually being able to get together as a family and do stuff, so. I have so many things lined up. I'm actually gonna be looking for a job in business administration. I met some great people who had some great things to say. Let me know when I cross that bridge to come talk to them. So I'm very excited about that. You know, to just have people that, you know, are looking out for you. Just see that you're trying to do something, you know, to change your life and your situation. Standing there waiting, like, come on in. We're happy to have you. So, yeah.
What do you think is going to happen when the program ends?
You know, I believe that we spend a lot of time thinking about what happens when something ends. And to me, that's a clear sign of not trusting individuals. So if I am going to say that I trust you enough to give you money and know that you are going to do what you and your family need, I have to say that I trust you enough to have put a plan in place for when this money ends. So I believe that individuals are going to continue to do whatever they need to do to take care of themselves and their families.
People want to be productive. They want to have a better tomorrow than they have today. And if you give people a stable, durable source of income that they can count on, then most people will invest that money in ways that are best for them.
As we live in a moment of change, it's going to happen. Driverless cars are going to arrive. Artificial intelligence is going to improve. Progress, though, in terms of people and whether they're better or worse off, that is optional. This is a moment to lead. This is a moment for debate because the future of our families and our children is really at stake.
Cash to me is freedom. It is freeing. It gives you options that without you do not have. Cash allows them the freedom to actually make the decisions, to determine what it is that they need for themselves.
You know, right now I'm an academic. Let's say for some reason academia doesn't work out, and I need to take a couple of years to get some training or to switch careers. Or let's say I have a parent that really needs my help. I can instantly fall back on that universal basic income in that pinch. So it's something I really want for, you know, the disadvantaged people in this country, but it's something I also really want for myself. And I think that's how you create really powerful political movements.
Money's not evil, but money's with the people.
We have to take this opportunity and seize it. We do not have unlimited time. And so my ask for you all tonight is for you to take this new vision of the economy, this trickle-up economy, this human-centered economy, this vision, and make it yours.
I don't know if y'all picked up on it or not, but right now things are less than ideal for a huge number of people in this country. People are being let go from jobs that are never going to come back, racking up medical bills they're never going to be able to pay, and oh, by the way, a global freaking contagion-level pandemic. Whew. Hard to feel very good about things right now, but don't you think you'd feel a little better if you had slightly more assurance that you and your family were going to be okay? If we really believe in the land of the free, let's act like it. Let's lift that giant economic boot off of people's necks. Let's give everyone a piece of the good old American pie so that no one has to start from nothing. That's freedom. That's UBI. Think of it. There's two things we love in this country. It's cash and freedom. But anybody that's ever been poor here can tell you that in America, if you ain't got no cash, you ain't got no freedom. You're shackled. Shackled to a job that exploits you. Shackled to a shit interest rate that saps you dry, shackled to medical bills for ailments so old they could have their own student loans they're defaulting on. It's an oppressive and disheartening state of affairs that leaves people doing whatever they can just to scrape by.